Hey everybody, Mike Harmon back with you inside the Swollen Dome. Fired up, week one finally upon us. All the prelims, all the unnecessary fodder and sound bites and worrying about Rex Ryan and the New York Football Jets. Because let's face it, we're not worrying about them. The rest of the season is over. And Thursday night, we pop the cork on a new celebration, a new year of NFL football. Pleased to be back in the chair, joined by my Fox Sports Radio colleague, Buck sideline guy, TJ Reeves. We're going to get into those Bucks later, but could you believe the magnificence of one Peyton Manning a night ago?
Wow. First, it's good to be with the Swollen Dome. And for the record, were you not touting Julius Thomas, not Demaryius Thomas, but you were touting Julius Thomas on this Swollen Dome website? And as we like to say in the South, I'll be doggone as to who caught the first couple of touchdowns there in the first half with Julius Thomas. The thing is, you forget about who specifically caught him, because the man threw seven of them. What a performance. What a second half. He threw for 300 yards and five touchdowns in the second half, Michael. So that's a career for some people. What a great opening night. And I know if you're a Raven fan, you still hang your hat on, hey, we won the one that mattered in the playoffs, right? I guess that's some consolation. But good Lord, Peyton Manning had a huge night.
I guess you have a little bit of fun with that while you can. But the bottom line is the second half, absolutely a train wreck for the Baltimore Ravens. Look, Joe Flacco ends up putting up nice fantasy numbers, obviously made the two big mistakes, the one that should have been a pick six that wasn't. But when you look at it, five drop balls, I still question whether that's too low. That would have covered another 70 yards for him, kept some drives alive. The Dallas Clark, I don't even know what that was at the goal line. But people seem to be forgetting that for one half of football, this game played even.
Sure did. And the Clark play is a big play because that's going to put him up a full touchdown instead of a field goal. And there were a couple of key plays. You know, I've heard a lot on Friday about, well, the Welker play should have been overturned, and yes, it should have. And they would have been punting. Yes, they would have. But to honestly think that the rest of that half, that Peyton Manning and the Broncos had not figured things out in terms of how they were going to get the ball into Demaryius Thomas's hand, how they were going to continue to utilize Julius Thomas, the tight end, or Welker underneath, I mean, they were still going to put two or three touchdowns on Baltimore because they had figured out what the Ravens were doing in the first half, obviously, and they hit them with plays. So, I mean, I understand the point that that call needs to be correct, and the Ravens should have been on the ball to challenge it, but it's not as if Peyton Manning was going to be completely shut down in the second half because of it. And I guess the real question for fantasy football purposes, when you digest a seven-touchdown game, is he going to continue to spread it around? Is Welker going to be the biggest beneficiary? I mean, Mike, that's the big debate, right? I mean, is he going to continue to spread the wealth or not moving forward? It was a huge game, but what? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we look at it, it was a question of whether the balls go around. Back to the game for just a second. As soon as Michael Orr left the field, that was it.
Yeah.
Kobe Jones' loss, obviously huge, and you see Stokely, Dallas Clark did end up leading the team in receptions, made a couple of plays later. Torrey Smith, quiet 92 yards for him. But the fact that they had no ground game and suddenly a Denver team that had zero pass rush the first half were on Joe Flacco every drop back. So, you know, I circle that big time. So while we don't dismiss what Peyton Manning and that offense were able to do, because as soon as he made his in-game adjustments and had enough film on these guys, because remember, a lot of moving parts, and that was what everybody was saying, the Ravens lost too many guys from a year ago, not counting the fact that the Broncos were without Bailey Miller and Elvis Dumervil was now playing for the Ravens. In the end, you know, as soon as Orr goes down, it really just kind of went to hell offensively.
Here's an interesting point. I think this is an interesting point. How much did they miss the leadership of the retired Ray Lewis and the departed Ed Reed, who were there for so many years that when those problems start to arise defensively, those guys are going to rally the troops and get it corrected to where it doesn't become a blowout? And I guess the larger point moving forward is if you have players going against Baltimore's defense here in the short term, you got to play them because you don't know if they're going to continue to be in this kind of play. I realize it's not Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Drew Brees every week, but, I mean, after what you saw in the second half, don't you agree, Michael, that you got to, if you're going against the Baltimore Ravens, you got to play your skill guys against the Baltimore Ravens, I think.
Yeah, I think you got to feel pretty good about it. I mean, you're not going to deploy the same type of weaponry and you don't have the guy that makes such dramatic in-game adjustments. You know, Manning had a great first half, so certainly not discounting that at all. But this game got away, and you're not going to have these blow-ups, I don't think, as the season goes on. They'll tighten things up. These guys will start playing together a little more. But I do agree with the veteran leadership. I just kept wondering when someone was going to suddenly pull up saying, oh, I've got a hammy, to try to slow this thing down. It didn't happen. You got to at least force the referees to give you a warning about it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and they want to play no huddle. And there are a lot of teams that were utilizing that in the preseason. Baltimore was one of them. I saw them against the Buccaneers in the opening preseason game when their starters, Wacko and Rice and Torrey Smith and all those guys, ran no huddle for the entire first possession. The Patriots, the second week, did the same thing and ran a whole bunch of no huddle. And we saw the Broncos doing that. We're going to see several other teams probably come up there to the line. The Philadelphia Eagles come to mind as another one that's going to do it. I think Seattle's going to probably do it some too. Pace of the game and get a bunch of plays off. Chudzinski in Cleveland's going to kind of be the same thing. They want to play quickly. They want to play fast. So that's something new. And will teams use the tactic of faking the injury or trying to do something to slow down the opponent, the gamesmanship that goes on?
Got to do something to try to slow it down. You got the spread out looks, everybody jumping off the Eric Decker bandwagon. I warned you that it might be a little bit of a difficult spot to try to get everybody involved, but look, he dropped a sure touchdown pass and would have had himself a nice fantasy night. So people diving off on the trade wagon right now, I'm advising go fleece them for whatever you can get Eric Decker at the moment, because Peyton Manning will make him whole. He's not going to have the 13, I don't think, that we saw a year ago. But in the end, I mean, you've got a guy off the waiver wire and Thomas that rises up. Demaryius Thomas had his 78-yard touchdown sprint, and I joked, analysis, Tebow's was 80 yards.
Yeah, right. Well, one thing to remember, long season, guys get hurt, as you know, so this is why you have depth on your own team. Maybe Eric Decker is not as featured right now as he might be in October or November if there's an injury or two, because obviously as long as number 18 is still in there as the trigger man, there are going to be great opportunities for those guys that are out there, and nobody stays healthy for the whole year across the board in the NFL. So, just from my standpoint, I wouldn't give up on any of those Denver Broncos right now in the short term, because I think there are going to be a lot of footballs to go around, like you said.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, as long as he stays upright. I guess the one moral victory before we move on from this game, the Ravens only allowed 65 rushing yards.
That's there almost like Cutcher saying they only used 1,000 arrows. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, there's your snarky commentary for the week. But as we go into this week one, you mentioned some of these high-octane offenses that we're expecting to see in Chicago, my hometown. They're waiting to see what the mad scientist Mark Trestman has up his sleeve. Give me a couple of matchups other than your own, which we'll get to in a bit there with the Buccaneers, that you're really excited to see, and who's got something to prove to you as we get this new season started.
I'm very intrigued by that San Francisco-Green Bay playoff rematch between those two teams out in San Francisco, just because you wonder, for fantasy football purposes, I drafted Eddie Lacy in our Fox Sports Radio League and in my other league that I've played in for about 20 years, because I'm curious, somebody's going to get the ball inside the 10, inside the 5, and you got to believe it's going to be Eddie Lacy at this point. Then again, they may do something else. We'll see how much he gets it, so I'm intrigued by that. And on the other side of the ball, Frank Gore is aging. He's a little long in the tooth. He typically is the guy that has gotten the ball in the goal line, but might it be some of LaMichael James or somebody else? And who's Kaepernick's favorite target now that Michael Crabtree is out with the ruptured Achilles? Because if you look at the numbers, and I know you do on SwollenDome.com, he threw a bunch to Michael Crabtree. That was his favorite target by far. So his security blanket. Who becomes that security blanket? Is it Vernon Davis? Who is it going to be for Kaepernick? So I think that's a very intriguing game, not just for on-the-field purposes in the NFC, but for fantasy football purposes, because there's a lot of unanswered questions in that game.
Oh, there's no question about it. One of the stats that I've kind of banged the drum on this preseason is the fact that Frank Gore had 63 carries in the playoff run. During the course of the regular season, there were a number of games where he tallied only 12 to 14 touches, and 8 games in which he produced 80 or fewer total yards. So Kendall Hunter out of the gate becomes that guy. I agree with you. LaMichael James, once he's healthy, coming back off his knee, I think we're going to see a lot of him.
Right.
The pass receivers for San Francisco, Anquan Boldin quietly tied for the most efficient downfield target a year ago. Caught about 63% of the deep balls that were sent his way.
Might he become that security blanket? You wonder, with Crabtree out there, is it Anquan Boldin that's going to be that guy that Crabtree throws to inside the red zone, inside the 25, a bunch? We'll see.
Yeah, I think he's the guy that, I mean, as we watched him with Baltimore, it became a power forward. I'm going to box out, create space, and just take over. That's exactly what he did. He'd get to the spot, he'd spread.
Well, yeah, we usually reserve that for, like, Antonio Gates, who played some basketball, and Jimmy Graham played some basketball. But you're right. I mean, yeah, wide receiver can box out, too, kind of the same way. So, again, I'm very intrigued by that game. I think we're all intrigued. We all have the feeling that New England is going to roll Buffalo. So is Amendola going to have the big game, kind of the Welker replacement? Can he stay healthy? You and I talked on the air on Fox Sports Radio, having watched that Patriot-Buck nationally televised preseason game, for whatever it was, a couple weeks ago. Tom Brady didn't look like he had missed a beat, even without Wes Welker, even without Gronkowski, throwing the ball to undrafted rookie Zach Sudfeld, the tight end, they're throwing the ball to receivers that you haven't heard from, first-year guys, undrafted rookies. He didn't look like he'd miss a beat. So now if Amendola's in there and Gronkowski at some point is in there combined with these guys, I think New England's going to roll again, and it's just going to be curious who out of those young guys early on in the year is going to get a lot of the throws to them, especially in the red zone.
Yeah, I think out of the gate, you mentioned Sudfeld, another one of these tight ends popping up out of the weeds with Gronkowski. They still list him only as doubtful. Can we cut the charades, people?
Right.
He's not playing for at least 2 or 3 weeks. New England, over the last 3 years, 5-1 against Buffalo, averaging 40 points a game.
Yep.
And as we've talked about with Tom Brady, go back in their logs over the last decade, Donald Richie Caldwell was a leading receiver for a couple of those years.
Well, and you wonder there with Stephen Ridley and Shane Vereen. Vereen appears to be a good pass target in the preseason, and Ridley appeared to be the guy getting the ball on the goal line. Let's see if that's the case Sunday in that early game, because it's always an adventure, Belichick and his offensive coordinators, as to who's going to be the red zone running back, how much do they throw it inside the 10 and inside the 5. Brady rarely does the quarterback sneak on occasions, but again, I cannot overemphasize, having been there at field level, watching him go 11 for his first 11 in that preseason game, the second preseason game, against the Bucs' first team defense, with no name guys, Michael. It was just very impressive. That's why that guy Tom Brady's going to the Hall of Fame.
Give a little bit of love to Kembrel Tompkins, who I believe is one of your ninja picks for this week. I've got him ranked as a third wide receiver out of the weeds to give you some love. We've got two games in the NFC where the over-under number, and when it's all said and done, if you're trying to figure out who to sit and start, look to the game and look what Vegas wants to do with it. Atlanta, New Orleans, the total is 54. And the Giants and the Cowboys, the total is 48.5. No Jay Ratliff, other side, no deal. Stevie Brown out for the New York Giants, a secondary that was already pathetic. But obviously in that game, the player we're watching, David Wilson, no Andre Brown, means the spotlight shines brightly on Mr. Wilson in Big D.
I would agree. And the Giants, Jason Pierre-Paul, not part of that defense. If he's not in there because of injury, they're a different pass rush against Romo in that game. That'll be a fun game, because you got a feeling that Romo, with the big contract, got something to prove. Giants always play well in Dallas. Eli Manning has always played well in Dallas. Old stadium or the new Cowboys, AT&T Stadium, I guess it is now. So that'll be interesting. Back to that Saints-Falcons game. Again, that one's near and dear to me because they're in the same division with the Buccaneers in the NFC South. Remember the final meeting last year was the Thursday night game where Atlanta basically put New Orleans out of the playoffs for good. There was about 3 to go, and in that game, Drew Brees was awful. I believe he had 4 or 5 interceptions, so he's got a bad taste in his mouth. And, oh, by the way, his guy is back. His play caller is back. The head coach is back, Sean Payton, and Atlanta's defense is shaky to begin with. So I agree with you. Look for a lot of fireworks and a lot of points. And particularly, I mean, the Saints pass defense is not very good either. So this could be a shootout, and play your guys in that game, particularly your receivers in that game if you have them.
Just like last night, if you got them, put them in.
Yes.
Running backs, you know, PPR leagues, you get your love for Darren Sproles. Everybody's excited about Steven Jackson, thinking he's found the fountain.
I had an analyst tell me something 20 years ago that I've always hung on to, and it's very profound. Are you ready? Play your best players. Don't second guess and talk yourself out of playing your best players. Play your best players. If you've got Julio Jones, play him. If you've got Jimmy Graham, play him. You'd rather go down playing those guys than sit there and watch them have a great game when you try to outthink a matchup. So play your best guys. That's the TJ motto.
Yeah, week one is not the time to get cute.
Yeah.
If we're in week 8 to 10 and you desperately need a win and you're going boom or bust on that third receiver, have at it. Out of the gate,
you
play the guys that you drafted to be your studs and assume that they're going to perform. We mentioned it a little bit early. Chip Kelly is taking this Philadelphia offense, and you look at DeSean Jackson, you get excited about the potential for LeSean McCoy.
Yep.
Beyond that, it becomes a roll of the dice as to who those secondary targets are for Michael Vick while he's upright.
Yeah, I would agree. And, boy, what a wild opening game that's going to be Monday night, where you got Robert Griffin III, who hasn't played in the preseason, and they're going to be holding their breath every time he runs around, because I think you agree with me, he's not going to change the way that he plays, at least not in the short term. You got excitement on that part of it. He's a dual threat to run, to throw on this rebuilt knee with the Redskin weapons. And I got Alfred Morris in one of my leagues that I'm very interested, because you look at the numbers. He had 1,600 yards and had a ton of touchdowns, and they gave it to him a bunch inside the 10. So you're wondering about that. And then meanwhile, on the Philadelphia side, you know, Michael Vick has got to be ecstatic that he is at the controls of this offense with the pace of play, et cetera. But you're right. Beyond, are they going to utilize Riley Cooper some in this game, who's had a controversial week with his own team and a practice incident? How much is, you know, LeSean McCoy had an awful year last year, so he's got to have a chip on his shoulder too. And then you got Chip Kelly as the brand new coach who's never done this before. And it's Monday Night Football on the road. So that's a very intriguing game for fantasy football purposes and for NFL purposes on Monday night.
The other NFC game that they love, 51.5 is the over-under in that game. Let's go to your game as you have the Buccaneers here with us. What should be, at least by most accounts, a walkthrough?
Can I stick in there that if Buccaneers-Jets gets to 51 points, they might have to play 6 quarters. It might be 7. And maybe the Bucs do have a breakout day offensively, but I don't know that anybody's expecting. You're not expecting that the Jets are going to put a bunch of points on the board, right, with Geno Smith at the controls?
The total is 40 points, to put it mildly. I believe that is the lowest total on the board this week. But one thing the Jets were able to do last year, look, they were terrible, and they're terrible, at least on paper, offensively. And we'll wait 2 or 3 weeks, and then we'll just write a quick note to confirm it. There's nothing offensively that excites you. But defensively, they played some pretty decent ball, particularly against the pass a year ago. So I guess there's people in New York can hold out a little bit of hope that maybe they can force an error or two by Josh Freeman that puts them in position to score.
It is a home game, and you would hope they do something. If you're a Jet fan, you hope they do something well early, get the crowd in the game, maybe get Freeman rattled, because, again, he was playing phenomenally well middle of the season last year. Remember that Thursday night game with the Vikings on national TV? He was brilliant down the stretch of that game. The great comeback in the fourth quarter in overtime to beat Carolina at Carolina. Freeman was playing at a very high level, and then he got very inconsistent, to use your word, and was throwing interceptions late in the year. And that's something you cannot do, especially on the road. And Doug Martin's going to be a big key in this game. Again, I get the privilege of being on the Buccaneer game broadcast. I was around Doug Martin on Friday. I was actually joking with him. You'll like this fantasy football story. How many leagues last year did Doug Martin go in the first round? Probably almost none, right?
0.1% anyone that was run by a member of his family.
It was probably second round or even later. I got him in the third round of my longtime league that had a couple of other Buccaneer fans in it, but even they didn't pull the trigger in the second round. until the third round. Now, fast forward, Doug Martin's on everybody's tip of their tongue. Everybody's taking him second or third in all of their drafts. So I saw him on Friday, and I said, hey, you do realize that almost every fantasy football league, you're the second or third overall pick. And he looked at me and went, really? As if he, I mean, I don't think he genuinely, Michael, knows that about fantasy football. You know, some players know some things. But I said, what do you think about that notoriety? He goes, that's crazy. He goes, that's crazy that they would think I'm that good to be up that high in a fantasy football draft. So what a difference a year makes. And I really wonder, I think the Jets are going to load up the line of scrimmage a bunch, Mike, in this game with the Buccaneers and say to Josh Freeman in the pass game, prove that you can beat us over the top. We're going to put Antonio Cromartie on Vincent Jackson and now prove that you can beat us over the top because we're not going to let Doug Martin beat us strategically in this game. So it'll be very interesting to see what kind of day Doug Martin has and early season he has now that everybody knows who he is and he's a marked guy.
Well, on a bigger issue from that, the lingering concerns of the MRSA outbreak there in Tampa. One of the linemen, Mr. Nix, still isn't practicing.
Yep.
Finally ruled out, I believe.
Carl Nix ruled out on Friday afternoon, and this is an all-pro left guard. This is a guy that they gave $30 million to in the offseason of 2012, who was only able to play seven games in 2012 before a toe injury sidelined him. Now he's dealing with the staph infection situation, and so he's out for this game and may out in the short term. We don't know. It's kind of a week-to-week thing, and that's one of the guys they're counting on to block for Doug Martin. But then again, the second half of the year, he continued to put up large numbers in big games with a couple of backups on the offensive line. So, again, I would not be overly concerned with Nix alone not being in there in week one. I'd be more concerned that the Jets are putting seven or eight guys in the line of scrimmage and saying to the Buccaneers, Doug Martin is not going to run through the wall here. You're going to have to throw over the wall.
Yeah, that was just one of the arguments, I think, that made him a more compelling owner. Compelling choice for owners back up
well, here's
at number
thing.
Two or number three spot.
Here's another thing. Hey, if you play PPR like we do in the Fox Sports Radio League, they throw the ball to him a bunch, and he can catch it.
Oh, and they're going to have to. That's
yes.
The way they're going to be able to spring him, at least for this week, I think.
Yep. Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt he'll be a catch. He'll be a catch, a pass-catching machine, especially down around the red zone. They will throw the football to Doug Martin. So if you have, you know, PPR advantage, advantages in your league, I would strongly look at him even in this matchup here with the Jets. Again, going back to what we said a few minutes ago, play your best players. He's got to be your best running back if you took him up on your board. Play the guy and let the Jets demonstrate that it wasn't a good move, because if he ends up getting 100 yards and a couple of touchdowns, you're going to kick yourself.
There you go. We can go back to the old fun with numbers. Remember what I said about the Ravens only giving up 65 yards yesterday?
Yeah.
The Buccaneers only gave up 82.5 yards per game on the ground last year. So
however,
we can always have a little bit of... Exactly.
However, the pass defense was 32 out of 32 in terms of giving up pass yards. And they've got to be better. You would think they're going to be. And remember, Darrell Revis makes his return from injury and against his old team in the first game back at MetLife Stadium. And, you know, is he potentially going to get a pick? It's interesting that Josh Freeman last played against the New York Jets, his rookie year 2009, threw three interceptions. Speaking of interceptions, guess who got the second one? Darrell Revis, who's now on his team. So let's see what happens here as this one unfolds in New York. Again, I don't think that'll be the game of the day, but it still will be interesting to see if the Buccaneers have a breakout game offensively against the Jets.
Always fun with statistics. For the Jets, we talked about them being able to score. Look, it's going to be few and far between. If you're desperate, Bilal Powell, the guy I promoted as the guy that should be leading the charge for the Jets, will actually be the starter. He doesn't make your lineup unless you're absolutely desperate. And
right.
In PPR leagues, I suppose Jeremy Curley can break off a bunch of five-yard routes.
And that's about it.
At Santonio Holmes, they're still playing games as to whether he's going to be able to play or not, has been unavailable for the most part to things visible to media and such, so how ready he is for game action is a whole other thing. And then there's
I agree with you. The only way you're playing Jets skill guys is if you're desperate on week one.
Absolutely desperate. And in week one, I would hope you're healthy enough that you don't have to do that. Which team out of all of these we look at the week one board would you say is ripe for an upset?
Interesting. And, you know, there are a lot of different matchups. Houston, Texas going to San Diego is kind of fascinating because Houston has kind of been the in pick the last couple of years. And maybe, what do I know? Maybe Houston's going to roll. But San Diego with a new coach, Phillip Rivers, everybody talking about how inconsistent he is from year in and year out and almost week in and week out. That might be a fun one in the very last game of the weekend in terms of what could be an upset. There's a couple of other ones that might be interesting, but I'm intrigued if San Diego's any good with Mike McCoy now out there working with Rivers, and might they have something for Houston in that late night game coming up on Monday Night Football.
As I made my picks for the Swollen Dome site, I came very close to picking San Diego. There's something I actually like a little bit about their defense. Changed out some pieces in the secondary, but the front seven got a little better, and big old DJ Fluker actually clearing some space for the run game could be intriguing. A lot of people pointing to Seattle traveling to Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it. I'm trying to get on board there, and I know they won a squeaker last year, but they did a hell of a job bottling up Cam Newton.
And there's probably no better coach at rallying his team right now on long road trips, et cetera, than Pete Carroll. I mean, you mentioned they went to Carolina and won. They had to play Buffalo in Toronto, and they went there and won. They go to Washington, D.C. in a playoff game, 6 days after or 7 days after they barely made playoffs and go across the country and beat the Redskins. I mean, granted, Robert Griffin III got hurt in the game, but he does a great job of rallying them around, and they will. If Seattle will be ready to go. If Carolina beats them, it's because they outscore them and outplay them, not because the Seahawks give that game away. But and the other interesting thing, obviously, is Chudzinski's not there anymore. New play caller for Cam Newton. Will there be some new wrinkles? Brandon LaFell or whomever else that's there with Steve Smith to help out that offense. That'll be a very interesting game also.
To hear Steve Smith tell you, it's a very good thing Chudzinski's no longer there. And you mentioned the no team travels better. Look, if you can't get up for week one
right
after a long layoff, then you might as well just turn in your jersey now.
I would agree with you, but I mean, there are some teams that just, I mean, San Diego is one of those that has always struggled with this, and I think Oakland is obviously another one. When they're coming east to play, it's almost like they're in a fog. Not the case.
TJ, I'm stopping you right there. You cannot use the Raiders as an example of anything.
Well, I agree.
In terms of why they're so bad.
Exactly, because they are a category unto themselves. But yeah, I mean, Pete Carroll's teams over the last two or three years, even the year that they had the 7-9 year, when they came east or had to travel a bunch, they were always ready to play. So I would not, Russell Wilson, play him. Beast mode, play him, because I think they're going to be ready to go in Carolina.
All right, final question for you as we round out. Adrian Peterson, I claim he's part cyborg after last year's running amok. Who finishes second in the rushing category this year?
Well, wait a minute now, because I think I have a diverse opinion than you. Do you believe that he's going to approach 2,000 yards again in 2013, Adrian Peterson?
I don't think he's going to need to, and no, I don't.
Does he get to 1,600 yards? See, I think he has a bit of a down year.
Plus gets it.
He'll rush for 1,000. He might even rush for 1,200.
Any running back can rush for 1,000.
Right. But he might even get to 1,200. But I don't know that they have a rose-colored year in Minnesota in this situation. I think that you saw a man with a chip on his shoulder a year ago, and in a lot of those games, Adrian Peterson was breaking off one huge run to help him. The Thursday night game that I referenced earlier in our conversation, the Buccaneers did a fantastic job on Adrian Peterson, except for one huge run. I know they all count. I don't know how many huge runs week in and week out Adrian Peterson is going to have. And I know this is kind of like predicting that U2 is going to have a bad night with their concert. But I don't think he has the 2,000-yard year. I don't think it's going to be anywhere close to that. I think it's going to kind of be a middle-of-the-road year, and I think Minnesota may struggle some this season. So, yeah, AP is going to be fun to watch. And then obviously at the top, Doug Martin is somebody that everybody's curious about. Arian Foster is going to get his carries and his yards. I think Chris Johnson could have a bounce-back year. Chris Johnson could be a 1,600, 1,700 or more yard guy there in Tennessee because they've got some offensive linemen ready to go. Broke that line in front of him. Munchak's a former offensive lineman. So keep an eye on Chris Johnson, the surprise, as one of the guys on the
roster. Look at you. He's one of my favorites, and for fantasy purposes, a guy that I kept imploring people not to sleep on for 2013. Well, this is just the inaugural firing of our podcast series. TJ will join me with regularity throughout the year and give us a little bit of insight on the Bucks, and we obviously have some divergent opinions on things. So
yes,
some battles to come here as we get out of week one. Just exciting to have real football back. No more of this exhibition stuff. No more making up stories for the sake of carrying a 24-hour news cycle. It's good to have you back. Good to be back in real football.
Yeah, no doubt. Ready to see what's going to happen in week one. And obviously, I will pay the closest attention to Buccaneers, Jets, and that Sunday early game. But I'm anxious to see all of this different action this weekend. And it has truly become a passing league. So let's see what kind of passing numbers are out there for this weekend, week one. I mean, if Peyton Manning was the prelude, let's see what else is out there for this weekend, week one, throwing the football.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who comes in number two in the touchdown category and how much Drew Brees and Matt Ryan try to approach that number in what promises to be an entertaining game there in the Big Easy. TJ, thanks so much for the time. You have been inside the Swollen Dome here on SwollenDome.com.